This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
And later on, workers demand that the New York State Department of Labor enforce the laws. But first, in the 1950s, Stanley Aronowitz was a factory metal worker and then a director of organizing with the Amalgamated Clothing Workers and the Oil, Chemical, and Atomic Workers Union. He is currently a professor of sociology, cultural studies, and urban education at the CUNY Graduate Center and has written dozens of books on the U.S. working class. His most recent book is The Death and Life of American Labor Toward a New Workers' Movement.
As we look toward organizing and building in the year ahead, let's hear what Professor Aronowitz had to say about revitalizing the faltering organized labor unions and strategies and tactics to rekindle the growth of the workers' movements.
To begin with, I'm going to say that the assault on unions signals three things. One is the belief by the Republicans and the conservatives generally that they have the upper hand after 40 years, not only of union decline, but of the reduction in the power of progressives. That you all know. The second is something that you might find a little objectionable, but I don't think that I'm wrong, is that the Democrats are now dominated by center and center-right people. The President of the United States is black was a tremendous move and was very important. That he has capitulated to a large extent to the center and the center-right has something to do with the decline of the progressive movement generally. And that's why the Republicans have gained confidence. And the third factor is the one that is even more controversial, that we of the labor movement, I use the word movement, by the way, in great hope, but not accuracy. We in the unions and in the labor movement generally have been intimidated and put on the defensive by those attacks and by the refusal or the wavering of the Democrats from the top way down to the bottom to really listen carefully to working people's demands. The labor movement grew and prospered when it regarded the law at a distance. The one exception was the National Labor Relations Act and the Public Employees Acts of various states, where we began to feel, I think mistakenly, that the law was on our side. The law has never been on our side. It's always been equivocal. The National Labor Relations Board is very political. For the last 50 years, it's never been a genuinely pro-labor board, even though the law says that the right of workers to organize and the function of the law is to encourage organization. That's what the law says. I've read my NLRA. As a union organizer, I had to take cases before the NLRB. But they don't do that. They think of themselves, if they're good, as mediators and as neutral. That wasn't the objective of the law. Beyond that, we sign long-term contracts. We settle for wage agreements that are below the inflation rate. We do. So the question becomes in the minds of a lot of working people who are not in unions now. Private sector unions, by the way, the number is around 6%. Public sector unions are still about 32%. The problem is that there's no reason to believe unless you have some faith, and it has to be something like religious faith, that the labor movement is the movement of the working people anymore. It is not. It's the movement of its own members at best. We are on the defensive because we do not say that an injury to one is a concern of all, that if it's teachers or it's hospital workers or it's public employees, clerical workers, that that's our concern as well as the members of 1549 or of the UFT or of the Professional Staff Congress. We have become narrow, we've become self-interested, and because of that, we've allowed them to regard us as an interest group, not as a class movement. The labor movement, at best, is a class movement. And if it's not a class movement, then it might as well go home and pack its bags. It's not a movement anymore. In New York State, we have a Taylor Law. And that Taylor Law forbids public employees from striking for any reason or for engaging in job action for any reason. Everybody wants the Taylor Law provision of no strike, of illegal strike, to go away. We will make it go away when we take direct action. We will not make it go away by legislation, because the legislature is stacked against us. Democrat, Republican, it's stacked against us. And unless and until we stop depending on the Democratic Party and the law and begin to depend on our own power, nothing is going to go down. And that is embedded in my new book. If we, as a labor movement, represent the working class as a whole, then questions of housing, education, transportation, questions of police violence, all of those things are in our purview. And if we do not address the issue of the rent stabilization law in New York State, if we do not address the problems of health care, the problems of education of our kids, the public schools in New York City are a disgrace. And as long as labor does not demand the voice in the shaping of the curriculum, your union, UFT, our union, PSC, it's not going to work. But you've got to make a demand that actually gets to the core of the education process.
Right.
And the core of the education process is what is taught and what is learned.
Yes.
And we have things to teach as well as learn. What we've got to teach is that this country was not built by the Rockefellers and by the Morgans. This country was built by working people. That's a simple lesson.
Yeah.
Who builds the railroads? Was it the Rockefellers?
And we continue to build.
No, but we don't talk to that. What we're still talking about is the workplace alone. Now, don't misunderstand me. We have to do the workplace and do a lot of good things, and we are some in that regard. But what we're not doing in education is entering the schools and making the fight about the curriculum. The curriculum includes, should there be standardized lessons? No. Not maybe, no. Randy Weingarten argues both sides of the story. And she's got to start, with your help, arguing, no, we don't want standardized tests.
That's why I'm here.
Well, I know you are, but that's not true of McGrew and your union. That's not true of what's going on around the country. And when they talk about teacher evaluations, you think that 30% of teacher evaluation, if they settle in Chicago or you're settling here in New York, should be on the basis of what the student's performance is on standardized testing? Hello! That's a serious capitulation. I think we've got a long way to go, but one of the things we have to talk about is what is education and who's the education for. I've written 4 books on education, and I cannot find, either in the charter schools or in the public schools, K to 12, much hope. It's still based on standardized testing. It's based on browbeating the kids. It's based on throwing kids out of the classroom if they're a little disruptive. I was in the principal's office every day in my 6th grade. I was a disruptive kid, hyperkinetic, whatever they call it. And PS 57 in the Bronx, I spend my time in the principal's office and I talk to the school secretary most of the time, not to my teacher. But the problem is now they throw you out. If you've got any spunk, you're out of the classroom. Where do we stand on these questions? How do we defend our own people? My mother took me to work when I was 5 years old. And the reason she took me to work is not because it was take your kid to work day. It's because she was on a sit-down strike at Alexander's on Fordham Road in the Bronx. And she didn't know what to do with me, because if she didn't have me with her, what was she going to do? So she took me to work, and she went on a sit-down strike. She lost the strike, and she was out of work. But she retired as a 65er, member of the UAW, with a $300 a month pension plus Social Security, and never had a check-off. She paid her dues by hand each and every month. That's another issue. How do we know who our members are? How do we get close to our members? And it's a different kind of labor movement, but I would suggest that some of these issues, if they're not taken up soon, the labor movement is then going to be like a group called the Situationists in France, where they actually expelled so many people that finally they had 2 people left, and one of them expelled the other. I'm sorry, I really am, but the fact of the matter is, and it's a fact that we better face, that the labor movement of the future will not have the law on its side for a long time. And every day, in every way, the unions are going to be challenged to reach the members. As long as we have a union movement that is tied hand and foot to the Democratic Party at a national level and at the local level, they're going to retreat one after another, because that party is the party of big business. This movement has to be dependent upon its own membership. We don't even have a labor party. We don't even have a coalition for a labor party. But in Lorain, Ohio, they're building a labor party. They've broken with the Democrats. So that brings me to my main point. And the main point is it's got to start locally. The national scene is going to be one of complete and utter retreat for a long time. I'm not saying this is permanent. You know, by the year 2050, things will turn around. And that's half a joke, but it's not. It's only half a joke. No, because we have been habituated to the reliance on great men and great women, primarily great men, and habituated to the two-party system. Every time there's a struggle, for example, to break with Cuomo. And what did the unions do? Did they support Teachout? I'm not even arguing that she's the best thing since cream cheese. Sliced bread, it depends on which way you go. But no, we'll support Cuomo, and he's no good. No, it's really true. And as long as that is the way in which the labor leadership operates, then the labor movement is going to continue to retreat. Let me say one more thing, and that is not easy to hear. Most collective bargaining today is collective begging. Real collective bargaining requires the threat of a strike. It doesn't mean you strike. It means you have to be able to strike and willing to strike and ready to strike. And if you don't have that, you're not a union. If you look at the history of the of public employees organization in New York City and crazy public employees like the health and the hospital workers, those unions were built in struggle. Al Shanker, who was not my favorite president, Al Shanker built the UFT on the basis of the willingness to go to jail. And he went to jail. He had 5,000 out of 50,000 or more teachers ready to go out. And he went to jail because he struck. When Roger Toussaint of Transport went to jail, he immediately struck a deal and he was out in 5 days and they collapsed. We're not talking about a labor movement anymore. We're talking about a set of institutions that are fundamentally institutions, not insurance companies. And until we break from that, the membership has to own the union again. But it's not going to happen unless people engage in direct action. We can praise Occupy, but they took over public land. We can praise the occupations that took place in Chicago when a small, tiny union called the United Electrical Workers went into a window factory and sat there. But if we don't do it, if we don't sit in the administrative offices, if we don't sit in the factories, if we don't sit into the workplaces, if we don't take over when we have to, forget it. The problem is, and we have to admit this, look, I was a union bureaucrat. I was a local union officer. I know what the labor movement is. I mean, I know what goes on. All leadership, whatever they think, they got to protect the institution. I know that. Not only are their salaries involved, but they have good things. They do a lot of good things. That goes without saying. But the steady retreat has to be faced. It's not simply that we didn't do this and we should be ashamed of that. It's that we are not citizens of this country. We are in the thrall of the cops, of the law, of the politicians, and of the large corporations. And we got a break. One more sentence. And that break is going to take an anti-capitalist perspective. And it may not be called socialism to start with, but it's got to be anti-capitalist. Otherwise, we're sleeping in their bed, and we're not admitting it.
Arise, you workers, from your slumber. All you wage slaves, everyone.
The revolution comes like thunder, and the age of hypocrisy is done.
Turn off their televised illusion. Stand up and look them in the eyes.
Declare your mental liberation. Shake off the dust and claim the prize.
So comrades, come rally. In the last fight, let us face the human race.
Well, it certainly does, and I couldn't resist going back to the international.
Going forward to the international.
Thank you, Ken, indeed. Well, yes, you know, the minimum wage went up in New York State to $8.75 an hour, but that's not enough to live on, says the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops en masse, and Furthermore, too many of New York State's workers will see absolutely no change. You know why? Because Governor Cuomo's Department of Labor is not enforcing the labor laws.
Armed with these complaints, NMAS headed directly to the Department of Labor site on Varick Street, threatening to sue Governor Cuomo and the Department of Labor to enforce the minimum wage laws and process wage theft claims timely. Let's join the protest in progress.
What do we want? When do we want it?
Now!
Thank you so much for coming out. My name is Leah Lotto. I'm an attorney with the National Center for Law and Economic Justice. And I'm here today representing the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops, or NMAS.
Yeah.
We're here today because the New York State Department of Labor is failing workers. Wage theft is a huge problem in the state of New York. In New York City alone, over $1 billion are stolen from workers each year. And the New York State Department of Labor is the agency charged with fighting this epidemic of wage theft. When a worker goes to the DOL to report that her employer is paying her less than the minimum wage, is not paying overtime, or is stealing her tips, it's the Department of Labor who has the duty to investigate her claim, investigate it thoroughly, and investigate it in a reasonable amount of time. When the state comptroller audited the New York State Department of Labor last year, they found that they have over 17,000 open cases, and of those, 75% had been open for a year, a full year or more. And that is not a reasonable amount of time. So we're here today, we're all here today to demand that the New York State Department of Labor fulfill its duties to enforce the New York State labor law. We have workers here who are going to share their personal stories behind those numbers and really show how this is hurting New York's workers. We're going to start first with Joanne Lum, who's the executive director of the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops.
We're here today because under the Cuomo administration, the Department of Labor is letting law-breaking bosses get away with wage theft. And this is running rampant throughout New York State. A lot of us are working hard. However, thousands of workers are not getting the minimum wage, nor overtime, nor the wages that they should regularly get, like tips. In addition, thousands of other workers are working misclassified as independent contractors. They're unpaid interns. They're car service drivers, not getting a penny in pay. There are 1,000 more workers who are not getting their pay of a day's work, a week's work, working as day laborers, for example. Why is this happening? The Department of Labor, under Cuomo's administration, is helping the criminals more than the workers. That's why 17,000 cases open here. Delays of 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. And now, to get rid of the backlog, the DOL is using new ways to get rid of cases. DOL has decided it won't investigate the full 6 years going back as allowed by law, only three. So that means that bosses can keep 3 years of stolen wages. It won't go after the individual boss. So if a business shuts down, well, often that's the end of the case. It won't investigate cases when you don't work there anymore. It won't take cases of less than $500. It won't look into misclassification cases. Generally, what the DOL seems to be doing is shut down cases, deny cases, drag cases out for years, don't investigate too much, and settle just for a few dollars. What kind of message does this send to workers? Don't bother going to the DOL. The state government doesn't enforce the labor law. The state government, under Cuomo, favors the rich, favors the thieves. What kind of message does this send to businesses, the bosses?
Well, stealing from your workers is okay. Even if you get investigated, you won't have to pay too much. And for the businesses that are trying to comply with the labor law, well, good luck. You're going to have to compete because New York State is open for sweatshop businesses. We need a DOL that enforces the law, enforces the labor law, not one that promotes wage theft crimes. And if the DOL doesn't do this, we're ready to sue them up and down. All you workers who have cases at the DOL, let us know. Join us. Together, we can hold the DLO and Cuomo's administration accountable for enforcing the labor law.
Next, we have Marco Lino, who is a worker.
Bueno, compañero, trabajé en Marqueta Rosemary Farm por más de 4 años, 6 días a la semana, 13 horas diarias.
I worked for the Market Rosemary Farm for more than 4 years. I worked 13 hours a day, 6 days a week. They only paid me $4.67 per hour, and I didn't have any time to eat and no time to rest. I came to the Department of Labor in 2008 to complain about Rosemary Farm. I would come to ask about my case every month or sometimes every 2 months, and every time they told me to wait, and every time they told me the same thing. And the Department of Labor told me to investigate my own case on my own. I'm tired of waiting for 6 years. The Department of Labor says it can't collect my old wages, my stolen wages.
Pero si ellos esperaba hasta el negocio que cierre y me mandaron ir a buscarlo.
But they waited until the business shut down and then sent me to look for it.
Y no quieran seguir buscando.
He doesn't want to continue looking for the boss as an individual. Governor Cuomo, your Department of Labor is not working for us workers. And not just I am waiting for my case. There are more than 17,000 cases stuck here. We're calling on Cuomo to enforce the labor law and resolve the cases. If you don't enforce, I'm going to sue the Department of Labor.
Llama a todos los trabajadores que tienen caso como yo para que podamos unirnos para luchar para nuestro derecho.
I call on all workers who have cases like I do. Come together so that we can fight for our rights.
Thank you. And our final speaker today will be Jinmin Chow.
Must stop flushing worker center. Recently, I bring many workers to labor department for complaint. What they do, like if worker unpaid wages less 500, you cannot file complaint here. They told us to go somewhere else. They also say they not go back to 6 years unpaid wages or minimum wage overtime claim. They only do like 3 years. And many workers like work at the restaurant, they already like so many years. Why are they doing that? Even labor law, 6 years. Also, recently we have worker, they got bad pay. They worked at restaurant for 4 years and labor department finally resolved the case. I got 7 months bad pay. I said, what happened with another 3 years? Because the boss maybe changed the company name. We went to the restaurant. Everything's still the same. The sign's still the same. Everything's still the same. Same employee, same boss. The whole time she worked there, you know, 4 years. Same boss, same employee, same restaurant, same food. Everything's the same. Only different, maybe the restaurant, the owner changed a little bit the company name. Because that, the labor department not go after even 3 years, not talk about 4, 7 months. What kind of investigation is that? That's really ridiculous. That's why, you know, we're here. We're ready to sue the labor department. We're ready. That's why we're here today.
I'm with Joanne Lund. First of all, I want to congratulate you because you're one of the few groups that is talking about the elephant in the room, or at least in New York State, enforcement of the labor laws now. Could tell us more about how this administration is doing in terms of enforcement of labor laws.
We've seen under Governor Cuomo's administration that enforcement of the labor law has really dropped. We're seeing 17,000 cases open at the Department of Labor. So many workers who are waiting up to 6 years, we've even heard of 7 years, with nothing. That's why we're seeing a lot of workers coming to us where they have resolved cases amounting to only $365 for 2 years of stolen wages. Even with all the about raising the minimum wage, yes, that is needed. However, what's missing in this whole debate is enforcement. Because to make any kind of minimum wage increase real, we need to have enforcement of the law. Wage theft is rampant. In the service industry, people are often not getting the minimum wage, nor overtime. People are not getting their tips. Their tips are being stolen from them. In car service or internships, many are being misclassified as independent contractors and not paid a penny. Day laborers who are not getting paid, non-payment of wages, it's rampant. So the word has been spreading under the Cuomo administration. But don't even bother going to the Department of Labor because nothing happens there. It's time that working people need to come together and hold this state government accountable. It's ridiculous.
Here, let's expand a little bit on this in terms of the panel on if minimum wage, so which is coming to some kind of a conclusion, I believe.
In New York State, there's a tip credit, which is what employers can claim so that they count the tips that workers get and pay a lower minimum wage. For example, waiters, it's $5 an hour minimum wage. Delivery workers are $5.65 an hour. The theory is that on top of that, the tips should add up to minimum wage. However, there is also rampant wage theft around that. People are not even getting the $5 or $5.65 an hour, and people are having tips stolen from them in different ways. And so the wage board was finally convened because Governor Cuomo left out tipped workers in his increase of the minimum wage, which we found really discriminatory because a lot are women and a lot are workers of color, immigrants. They would convene this wage board to hear testimony to see whether or not there should be an increase and what form. Yes, of course, tipped workers need to have an increase in the minimum wage. If we don't have protection of the tips, allowing the workers to have some control of the tips, even if they do raise the minimum wage, even if they eliminate the tip credit, it's going to mean that the wages of the workers will go down.
And we've been talking with Joanne Lum with the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops, always bringing up these issues, always doing a great job.
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.